This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Geekscapists, welcome to a brand new Geekscape podcast. I think I'm still Jonathan London, your host. And if this is your first Geekscape, well, welcome to Geekscape. We've been doing this since 2006, an almost weekly podcast talking movies, video games, comic books, pop culture, all the stuff that I grew up on, that I grew addicted to. And everybody was like, you know what? One day you're going to grow out of that, Jonathan. That didn't happen. If anything, all of those people started growing into the culture. But we're not gatekeepers here at Geekscape. We celebrate everybody enjoying this stuff. The Black Panther comes out next week. Have you gotten your tickets? I hope you got your tickets. I'm bringing Ian and Justin with me, along with my brand new wife, Heidi. Did you hear about that? I got married. If you're like, what the heck is this guy going on about? You know what? Usually I have a guest, and we're going to have a guest. We have a great guest today. My friend Caden Phoenix is on talking about her brand new Kickstarter project. And really, I just want to pick her brain as a creator, a fellow director. She's a filmmaker. She puts out all sorts of content like regularly. And I want to see how does she do it? She has this creative metabolism and like this like hustle mind that just keeps going. I feel like I've kept going for the last month and a half. Y'all have gotten quite a bit of Geekscapes. That's been fun. I've been to 3 film festivals in the last, 5 weeks? I feel like I was just in Austin doing that one, and then I came back, and I forget what the next film festival was, but we shot in San Francisco. I got married, and we've mentioned that, and then I was right off to Santa Fe, and Santa Fe was a fantastic festival. I made a lot of friends, and maybe you'll see some of them on a future Geekscape talking about their films. I'm forgetting stuff. Oh, yeah. Last week, we broke down Black Adam starring Dwayne Johnson. Was that fun? Did you all enjoy that podcast? That was out there. If you want to kind of get a gist of like what some of those Geekscapes are, Ian and I like to break down those big event movies. So we put one on the feed just right before this one. You can go check out what we thought of that. And I think She-Hulk is right before that. So whether I'm interviewing somebody, talking pop culture, maybe their projects, getting into their minds as creators, or we're just reviewing and talking about stuff, this is Geekscape. And we're going to talk to Caden Phoenix about her brand new comic book that you can be a part of, as well as all of the projects she's involved in. I'm not going to count them here because, well, I can't. There's just too many of them. But you'll get the gist when we come right back. All right, Geekscapists, let's get to it. So, first thing first, I'm a little distracted right now. Again, I've only been married to Heidi for 2 weeks. Y'all are familiar with Heidi. She's been on Geekscape before, unless this is your first Geekscape. And 2 weeks in, she's already done a white people taco night. That's where, those of you who aren't sure, maybe that's just how you do taco night. It's where you get the hard shell tacos or like the Ortega tacos or the El Paso tacos. You get them from the store and you get a bunch of like hamburger meat or turkey burger or whatever. And you grill it up and you basically make like tacos like white people and like I went through this last night. We had our very first, as a married couple, white people taco night. Like, it's a thing. There's a song. There's a freaking song. And if you're on social media, maybe you're on TikTok or something, like, you can find the song. I'm not going to sing it for you. It's horrifying. But yeah, I got through a white people taco night. Half of me was like, there's the only taco I know. But the Mexican side of me was like, oh no, my ancestors are crying right now. That being said, we did this on Halloween night. To make things more horrifying, we did this on Halloween night, invited friends over to fill out ballots. And I mentioned that because Geekscapists, we got the midterms. And I know we try not to talk politics too much on Geekscape, but this one's not a fuck around and find out midterm. We really need you in the United States to go vote, dig in, do some research. It's like weird when you say do your own research. That always puts up alarm bells now. Do research on your... On who's running in your local elections as well, because local is pretty damn important. And I want you to go out there and vote. You know what? Let us know if you're on Facebook, maybe you're on YouTube, maybe you're watching this on Twitch. Find us on social media and send us a picture of you with your voting sticker. Maybe you're going to be wearing a Geekscape shirt, and send it our way. And I don't know, maybe I'll find something to send you or something. But I really want all of y'all to go out there and vote, because it's super important. And you've only got 1 week left if you're watching this live. So as for White People Taco Night, I put out a video of my response to White People Taco Night, because Heidi made a video celebrating White People Taco Night. And I got to tell you, as much as it hurt, a couple of people chimed in. Lauren Banjo said, hey, man, you listen to Mr. T Experience. That's about as white as you can get. I'm actually wearing a Mr. T Experience shirt right now, the pop punk band from Berkeley, California. You got me there. Gabe Bravo, who I love, I think he's in San Diego, Gabe, is LOL, I'm 100% Mexican, but I still make tacos like this. I just add different seasonings. Maybe that's the secret. I'm a parent, man, and it's easy. And he throws up the hands up emoji. So, yeah, that's what we did. Invited some friends over, made them white people tacos, and voted. That's what I want you all to do. You don't have to have tacos, but you do have to vote. I would love to see some pictures of y'all with your I voted stickers. Okay, is that too much to ask? I don't think it is. All right, so let's get to it. I've got my friend Caden Phoenix here, and she's created this entire superhero line. These are Latina superheroes. She's the credit is the creator who created the first Latina superhero team. If you're watching this live, it's up on screen right now. This is La Brava. We're going to talk to her all about it. And here she is on Geekscape.
Hello, hello.
Caden, you know what I'm talking about with these tacos, the ones that you get at like the grocery store?
No, I understand what you're saying, but I've never experienced it because I'm just much more not that. congratulations on being more colonized. I agree. Don't tell anybody Chicana or Chicano.
Well, my friend pointed this out as a half Mexican, half Caucasian with the last name London. I'm both the colonizer and the colonized. Like, I am one and the same, kind of mixed up in here. So every now and then, like, there's going to be a white people taco night at the London household. Like, it is the London household. Okay. That's what it says. So I don't know if you're open to it.
No. I'm vegan also, so that is my I am going to show up regardless.
Yeah. You're not doing white people taco night. You're barely doing Mexican people taco night.
Yeah, well, they have actually really good tacos because they're in LA. Like, we have great, like, gracias madre. Like, we have really good vegan tacos, and it's jackfruit or it's potato or just, you know, whatever, any other substance. But they're actually really good. But even here in LA, even in the white people area, we fold our tacos with regular, you know, they're not hard shell, of course, because why would they be? But that's just me.
I mean, you know, it's a thing. And I got to tell you, when I went to the grocery store and was like, are we really doing this? Is this really something that's happening? Not only did I find the hard shell tacos, but there are some that are like Taco Bell Dorito flavored that you can buy at the grocery store. I found Takis flavored tacos. Like the, it's... the corporations definitely jumped in on it. I was like, okay, what's gonna be the least painful for both my bot. Let me just give the least painful option, both to me and my crying ancestors that I feel over my right shoulder. Right, left shoulders. Those are probably British.
Design. Yeah, they're just happy right. because they have flavor now in their tacos. Yeah. Yeah.
they're like, oh, this is too spicy. Too spicy. too spicy, Jonathan. To Caden, talk to me about yourself, because like I consider us friends, but really like we met because I was like, hey, this woman's got some real cool stuff going on. Comic book creator, filmmaker first and foremost. You've acted, you've done all sorts of stuff, and I don't know how you fit it all in. Maybe that's why I have you on Geekscape, to pick your brain and copy your playbook. But sure. how do you present yourself, and like where did you start out? Where'd you come from? I want to know everything.
That's a big question, plural. I am from East LA. I'm born and raised here, third generation. I went to Loyola Marymount University, so right over on the Bluff in Santa Monica. I majored in business administration. I'm Cis in business marketing. I'm sorry, I'm Cis in marketing. And so I did marketing afterwards. And then I just kind of pivoted. I needed a creative outlet. And so I started writing. And I chose screenwriting over novels just because film seems much more fun than novel writing. And so, you know, I just taught myself the structure. You read, you know, like you read Sid Field, you read all like the hero's journey and all that extra things that you read, you know, you just start writing. And that's kind of all that's how I started off. That was some years ago. And, you know, I wrote out feature length screenplays. I saw like no one's reading my stuff because I don't know anybody, obviously. So I pivoted and I started doing directing, like short films. And so then I, you know, because Crypt TV allows any submissions if they're 1 minute or less. And I don't do like horror, but I can do it really easily. And so I was like, great, I can do that. And so that's how I got my crew. That's, you know, I threw myself on set, which is really nice. And so I learned everything within production. My negative budget, and then continued writing meanwhile, of course. And like my first thought is like, okay, if I could write anything, if I can see anything on the big screen that was mine, what would it be? And my first thought was a Latina superhero. And so I was like, great, I can write that. Right, that was really easy. And so I wrote out a feature-length screenplay. I wrote out a short film as well, and I shot it. And then I wrote a and so then we shot it, and everybody I showed it to asked me for the comic book based on the short film, more so than the screenplay, because that's easier to show. And so every single time I was like, no, I don't do comics, because I didn't do comics at that time. And then like enough people asked me, and I'm very truth by consensus. So I was like, okay, fine, I will do a comic. And so I researched, you know, I pivoted again to this new world. And I researched comic versus graphic novel. And I just chose graphic novel because financially it made more sense that way. And then that's kind of how it started. And that was in 2019, so a few years ago, right before the pandemic.
Whoa. And if I look at work, your body of work, mm-hmm. it feels like this is something you've been doing for 10 years, not three.
Yeah,
because you have a lot of shorts, and like how many of them were at Loyola Marymount? Because I think Loyola Marymount is kind of like an under the radar, really good film school.
Oh, thank you. I sincerely think that I see a lot of the
thesis films here and there. They'll float up at festivals, mm-hmm. and whenever I see like a student block or something at a festival, mm-hmm. I like to look at the credits and be like, okay, like where'd this short come from? And everybody talks about places like, of course, USC, you've got UCLA, mm-hmm. you've got Chapman. I've been more than a few times taken by surprise that something that I thought came out of one of those more notorious film schools, mm-hmm. Loyola Marymount. They have a pretty cool film department. You did not come from that. I would think that you have started your short films over there.
I did take film classes of what I could and theater classes, but those were mainly like those are like the really fun electives, right? Because that wasn't my major in either one of those. And so like did I enjoy watching, like we had females throughout the decades, right? Like throughout the years. And so like we had the 40s, you know, and the film noir, and then we had this, like we literally went through the decades of females protagonists, you know, and what mm-hmm. it meant and how it reflected through the times, you know, like little things like that. But actual film production, no, absolutely not. I would never do film production, and I still would never do film production because I'm a director. And so I'm not technical in any way, and I'm the first to admit that, and that's fine. I'm a creative director. And same thing with theater, is so many plays and like really great stuff, but those are just electives because I had free electives, and so I took them. I would hope so. I would think that they have good film production. Everything there at my school is pretty good.
And so how did things start going? You said Crypt TV, you started putting together these, what are they, like 1 minute
They're 1 minute horror, and they're like, they have no arc. It's just a little quick reveal. That's really it. Because in 1 minute, you have to tell a story, which is not really a story at all. Because you have no characters. Mm-hmm. You have literally nothing.
It's like a gag. Yeah.
Yeah, you have the setup, and then here's the reveal, which is just the scare. And that's all it is.
And how did you get wrapped up in that stuff? Because that's something that when I saw that, it was like, oh, 1 minute shorts. I don't know if I, you know, I think that's the best way to approach them is like, they're a gag. They're like a piece of a short. They're like a setup and payoff. That's it.
Yeah, I just seemed fun, honestly. It seemed like a challenge, and it seemed easy because it's 1 minute, and it was really easy, and that's why. But that wasn't the overall goal. Is okay, cool, Crypt TV, that'll help set so I can pivot to the next stepping stone, etc. But like, I didn't even get in. I shot like three of them, and I didn't get in any of them. but it wasn't the point. Like, the overall thing is, I taught myself how to be a director. I taught myself how to be a producer. I might be my own first AD. Obviously, I was crafty. I was literally everything, and that was great.
But as you're putting them in, like, I have no idea how the Crypt TV thing started. You shoot these things, you put them together quickly, you submit them. They have to be accepted onto, I guess, our platform. If not, you're just putting them out yourself, correct?
Correct.
And that has its own benefits as well.
Well, for me, the benefit was, it was my film school. I taught myself. That was really it. I mean, it would have been a bonus if I would have gotten in, but whatever.
It's fine. I think we've started to realize that like Hollywood has been existing just fine for like over 100 years without us, and they don't really want us, and they're going to keep kind of keeping that door open or door closed. And we just have to create our own thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that you've done that. How much of your marketing degree that you got from Layla Marymount do you use in things like this Kickstarter that you've got going on that we're going to talk about in a little bit, but how valuable has that been?
I got so lucky that social media took off, because that's all marketing. Like, literally everything on social media is marketing, right? It is your brand. You are your own brand. Here's your key points. Like, literally, it's so easy. Here's your target demographic. It's really easy. I enjoy it. I think it's really fun. So I would say all of it. Obviously, I don't, like, we did, you know, I had to take accounting and all these extra little things that we had to take, international business and all this other stuff. But, you know, like, and some of it plays into it, of course, but do I ever need to balance a sheet? No, of course not. I own an accountant. But, you know, it doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt to know all these extra business managerial, like, because we had to take a lot of emphasis. We had to take all of them, but obviously mine is marketing. But everything's a business. It was just a great default. I got really lucky. But like, whatever industry you go to, it is a business at the end of the day, right? Do you make your money? If not, it's a hobby. And so there's little things. So in regards to my Kickstarter, yeah, it's marketing. It's just like, you post a week or two beforehand. You post on a Tuesday. You find out the data, right? Marketing is all data driven. Everything's data driven. And so you find out the information prior based on your past results or based on other people's past results. And then you just go from there and you see what works.
But you write these comics as well, like the, I'm leading you because I know the answers. But you write the screenplay. People are like, "Is there a comic based on this?" And that's been like the norm in Hollywood for like the last 10 years. Is someone saying, "Is this based on anything?" Like, where's the risk mitigation of like middle management Hollywood, where they just say, "Oh yeah, this sounds really cool. We're really into it. We're scared." Is it based on anything that I can then take to my boss and say, well, it was based on a comic and people went to see Iron Man. Like, can you not fire me? Where did you start learning to, because I feel like comics and screenplays are kind of paced differently. They're a little, they're cousins, but taking, you don't just like take the screenplay, hand it to the artist and be like, there you go, pal. Like, they have to be paced and structured a little bit differently. How did you start learning all that stuff? And I'm guessing you did it within the last 3 years.
So I do not write screen. I write screenplays as screenplays. Mm-hmm. I'm a screenwriter. For my artist, for my penciler, who's the first one that takes it, I still have my screenplay. I don't adapt it to the comic structure form. But what I do is I do storyboards because I'm also a director. So I know how to do the framing, right? And I just break it up. I generally do 4x4, so 4 across board panels down, but sometimes 3x3, whatever. But I literally do a storyboard just because that's what directors do regardless. They take the script and they do the storyboard based on the framing sizes, right? So establishing or two shot or whatever. And I do that, but I just add a little bubble here with the text so I know how much empty dead space is behind them. So they know that they don't need to fill that with background images. Right. And then I do the next panel and I do 60 pages because everyone has a 60 page contract on my artist. So I do all that work for them first, one, to make it faster, and two, because I like my shot sizes, and I'm a director. And so I like control of that. And so I do that for those two reasons. And so it makes it faster and I get the panel sizes that I want. They do have leeway. All my artists, I tell them that if they can make it better, that they can change it. And they do. Here and there, they'll change the angle and it's a better angle. And that's totally fine. That's fine by me. You know, as long as it makes it better, why not?
No, it's like working like with a DP. I always feel like, like you said, when I'm on set, like if I'm just kind of the least talented person technically in any of those arenas, like I think we have a good chance of doing something better, because you don't want me running the camera. You don't want me setting up you don't want me doing a lot of that stuff. Because, you know, I think a director has to be like a mile. I say this a lot on Geekscape too. A mile wide and an inch deep. Like you have to kind of know everything, but maybe an inch deep is short selling, but you just have to kind of know everything and have sort of your technicians. And then you're basically the tastemaker. You're basically the person who's like, hey, a little bit more, a little bit less, a little left, a little to the right, a little up and down. And yes, we're so close there. And yes, storyboards are a big part of that. I like floor plans. I got to tell you, I got to see Catherine Hardwick talk in Santa Fe. And y'all know her Geekscape is because she did Lords of Dogtown. She did 13. And of course, she did the movies with, she did the, what was the vampire werewolf ones, the Twilight movies. And she had a short in the Guillermo del Toro Cabinet of Curiosities that came out, I think, last week on Netflix. And she's just a major nerd like I am. And it was so reaffirming to have her show like her floor plans, her art, like you said, just like little like stencils and little things that she drew and little, you know, she busted out the color crayons or the color pencils and stuff and was doing her own wardrobe. But seeing the floor plans to me was the most reaffirming thing because I love that kind of stuff. She was an architect. So she approaches it pretty much as an architect top down, but I usually go Geekscape is like you don't need to know my process at all, but it is usually floor plans because meet space. People are gonna have to stand there, camera's gonna have to go there. You just want to make an order of shots and then shot list, and then for stuff that you need to that you need a storyboard for, you put the storyboards together, you put the artwork together. Here you are as a director. Have you drawn your entire life? Because that's something that comes to me, but it doesn't come easily to me.
No, I'm not an artist at all in that sense. I'm actually really, my stick figures are very scary looking. Like you don't want me to draw. But
so these like storyboards are pretty basic that you're doing for your artists. They're mainly composition. Yeah,
stick figures. They're really scary stick figures. on the bottom, it tells them who they are, right? Of course, they all
people like an R on the. You put an R on somebody, or like a Q or something, or like an S for their names.
On the bottom, though, it tells you like what their action is, their name and their action on the bottom of the panels. I do not draw at all. I was never an artist.
And 60 pages of that stuff is a lot. How long would it take you to? Okay, let's say you have a 60 page story. I'm guessing you don't write them all as screenplays first at this point, do you? You write them as 60 page comics.
No, they're screenplays. At this point. They're scripts.
Every single one of them is a 60. Oh, so it's like a TV script. Is this roughly a 60 page script? I'm trying to break it all down. The math.
Got it. So I read at the beginning, the first ones were actually 90 or within because they're feature scripts, and I still follow the same structure I use regardless. We're a feature film, not a pilot. But now, because we're the princesses, I got smarter because I had to keep cutting scenes out of all my superhero ones because they were too long. Because from 90 something, I had to bring it down to 60 pages in regards to the panels. And so I'd had to cut scenes out and dialogue left and right. So now I'm just writing shorter. So I'm still doing my structure, my hero's journey structure, but I just write really quick. And so I kind of cut off a lot of the first act for the most part. At least a little bit of the setup, but not that much of it. But yeah, I just write a little bit faster. Like I just write thinner is pretty much it.
And are you writing dialogue in depth or are you waiting for the art to come back and just kind of massaging it there? How in depth is the dialogue?
Everything I write goes on the page. I mean, if I'm on the screenplay to storyboard, if I put it on the dialogue box, it stays in the dialogue box. And so it'll end up on the comic.
How long does this take? Let's say you're like, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to knock out a 60-page script. How long is that process?
For a screenplay, it takes me a month to write out a screenplay, a feature-length screenplay. Those are a little bit faster because they're 60 pages, so it's not that bad. I average 5 to 10 pages a day if I can see it. So it's just from, it's how good I can see it prior within my outline, because I do outline prior. And then when I'm writing, we'll say 2 weeks to 4 weeks, just to be fair, on the average.
And you're just fleshing out that prior outline, well, going to script, going to
pictures. Yeah, and then the storyboard takes me a week, because it's only storyboard.
And it's stick figures. As you said, it's like fun little...
It's really boring, honestly, but yeah.
I know, I'm fascinated by it because everybody has their own method, and people come on Geekscape and they have a different approach. They say, oh, I write it in full script, full comic script, which I found, like, when I wrote the Miami Vice comics, I found it to be counterproductive to, like, the stream. Because, like you said, you can knock out 5 pages in a day because you're just flowing. But in comics, when you're paneling at the same time you're flowing, that, to me, started kind of denting my head. I was like, wait a minute, now I'm actually like putting captions and descriptions in here. I kind of like your version better. I think your version actually works a little better. It's like, hey, let's do roughly a 60 page script. We know a page of script is roughly going to be a page of comic, so let's make sure to, like you said, like in the outline, let's make sure to balance the drama and the exposition and the action, because it's got to have action. And then we're in a pretty good place at the end of a 60-page screenplay to start knocking these things out a page at a time into thumbnails. Yeah. I'm looking at the idea of doing another comic book project, so I was like, let me ask Caden on here. She's got this Kickstarter, and I've got to pick her brain about this stuff, because you know what? Weddings behind me, other projects behind me, this film that I have in festivals now, Array, it's got, I think, one more festival left in it, and that's behind me. It's time to start thinking about the next creative project. If it's a comic, I need to learn how to do it better, because Miami Vice was just me like smacking my head against the computer being like, I don't want to break down this stuff into full script. I don't find full script to be fun to write at all. And I think more and more comic creators agree.
I don't know.
But you I was going to say, you also don't just give, you also don't do the Marvel method. And like the Marvel method is basically describing stuff, letting the artists do whatever they want for the most part, and then coming back and putting in the dialogue, which is what Stan Lee used to do. He would put the captions and dialogue later after the artists kind of defined the flow of the story as artists, as visuals.
Correct.
So I
care more about the story and the character arc than about the characters themselves.
Okay, so throw that at me again.
So screenwriting, right? You care about the story. Whereas if you think of the comic book structure, the way that comics actually do, like writers for comics, there's a box for the panel. Here's a line. Above the line is the dialogue, and below the line is the action. And then there's another box, and the exact same thing over and over. And that's how writers write comics. And that's stupid, because I'm not the artist. It's not my job. No, it's not my job. I'm doing the storyboard just to make it go faster, but it's not my job to draw anything. It's not my job to see the world or see, you know, that's a directing thing, but really it's or that or the penciler's job. But my job is to give you a good story with the character arc, you know, with the with the B story, with everything else that goes with it, with the theme. So if you look at comic book writing, no one really cares about the writing itself. They care about more about the character. Why? Because it's all like, let's save Metropolis, let's save Gotham, let's save Central Park, you know, let's save Central City. You know, like they just say, let's save this over and over. It's the same story over and over if you look at it. Or the world, if you're like a Justice League or Avengers or whoever, if you're a team, you save the world, right? It's mundane, right? It's been done, right? You don't need a story for that.
You do have some of your more, I mean, when we talk about graphic novels, we talk about some of the, there's a lot of stuff that's not superheroes though. And I'm not being defensive totally, but.
Like Paper Girls is really good.
Paper Girls was great. And it was brutal the fact that they freaking canceled Paper Girls. I wasn't happy about it. I thought that show was, I thought those episodes we got were really, really great.
Yeah. And it was really cute. It reminded me of E.T. a lot. I don't know why.
Well, the comic I thought was fantastic. And I wanted to see that story on screen. And for the most part, Geekscape is who missed the Paper Girls adaptation on Amazon. That's a the liberties that they took with the comic, I think, were really smart adaptation of TV liberties. The comic's great. Don't get me wrong. I think that that comic's fantastic, and you'll enjoy it if you go pick it up off the shelf. But I think the TV show was getting set to be equally as fantastic in a TV sense. And they were fleshing out the right things and contracting the other stuff that needed to be contracted. Super sad when they canceled it. There's so much good TV, though. They're like, I don't even know what to watch at this point. Like, there's too much. What were some of your influences? And we really should start talking about the Kickstarter too, but what were some of your influences? I'm like so fascinated. Caden, I get people on here and I just start like absorbing their approaches.
Okay. Influences in regards to what?
And growing up, like, you didn't just like start up and be like, I think I'm going to tell stories. Like, what were some of the stories that influenced you when you were growing up, or like any of it?
So I grew up with a lot of movies, so mainly musicals, because my grandparents raised me as well as my mom. And so anything, literally anything, Julie Andrews, Sound of Music, Mary Poppins, I saw a million times over, King and I, of course, just anything. I saw a lot of musicals growing up. Also, my grandparents took me to the movies every weekend. So whatever was out, it didn't matter. So I'm a millennial. So like anything in the 90s was great because we saw two or three movies every weekend. And so it's just like, because it literally didn't matter. It's just like, we're going. And then just when we get there, we figure out what we're going to watch. And so lots of times, like, I'm very much more into features than anything else in that regard. Not that I'm against TV, but just because that was my childhood. So a lot of that in regards to the strong movies that I watched, you know, anything with Gina Davis, anything with Sigourney Weaver as well, right? Because we had really cool movies with them in it, you know, Long Kiss Goodnight, of course, League of Their Own, just Alien, you know, like any of the, all the cool stuff was them. And so they're definitely some of my influences. My mom, of course, in that sense as well. Yeah.
No, I think I didn't watch the new League of Their Own. Heidi watched it, the new League of Their Own, so that they brought back. Was it really good? After they canceled Paper Girls, I was worried that they were going to cancel League of Their Own, but they haven't yet, correct?
No, it's for an older audience. It's not for little kids. That's why, for one. For two, yeah, it's definitely, it's teen and up, but like it's for adults. And so that's why it's really cool. It's very historical in that sense. If you understand like the times and all the underlying themes of coming into one's own, they do that. They show the prejudices against pretty much anyone marginalized, right? So if you're female, if you're non-white, if you're whatever, non-straight, you know, it's just like they show it all. They don't throw it in your face, but you understand it as it goes through. And it's just how they're each trying to survive.
And what I liked looking at Halloween over the weekend and all the people that were out, and obviously on social media, there were a lot of people that I know that were dressing as League of Their Own characters. And I remember seeing the movie when it first came out. I'm older than you by a little bit of a stretch. And I remember going to see the movie, and it was kind of the beginning of Tom Hanks's like comeback. It was before Philadelphia, before Forrest Gump. And Tom Hanks was kind of like, I mean, Doe versus the Volcano really hurt Tom Hanks. The Burbs, sorry, Joe Dante, former Geekscape guest, like the Burbs really hurt Tom Hanks, but League of Their Own was the one that he didn't have to be the lead in. Gina Davis was. She was awesome. She was kicking ass. Like you said, Long Kiss Goodnight, when it was sold, I think Shane Black, that's the highest growth. That was the highest sell of a, that was the highest price for a screenplay when they sold Long Kiss Goodnight. And she was the lead in it. And it gave Tom Hanks a chance to like not be play like second fiddle and actually like do his thing. And I think that was the beginning of Tom Hanks' his like career kind of fixing itself. But seeing, and I was like, okay, well, cool. That's a movie from like what, 91, 92? Seeing how much League of Their Own stuff was out this weekend and people were dressing up as League of Their Own was awesome, because it's a testament to as much the old movie, but this new TV show, which I heard is great. Heidi loved it. She said it was awesome. All right, let's talk about your stuff. Are we ready? Let's talk about your stuff. This credit with the first female superhero, Latino superheroes, can you walk me through them? I'm going to bring them up here on screen. This is La Brava. This is your superhero squad. These are your babies, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, who we got? Talk to me. So, you explained it to me at Comic-Con in San Diego, but I want to hear it here for the Geekscapists.
Okay, so on the far left with the one of the orange background, that's Jalisco. She dances folklorico. Blades come out of her dress. She is my Mexican superhero. They're all different heritages. The one to the right of her is Santa. That's my Texan girl, so my Tejana. She has divine strength and deja vu. She takes on a corrupt politician called Ice, who's running for mayor. Next one over is Loquita. She is my supernatural teen detective, Puerto Rican Cuban from Miami. She ends up, she ends up finding a demon and saving the high school. There's more details to that, but there's that one. Again, to the right is Ruka, my East LA Chicana. That's where I'm from. She has instant karma. She ends up saving the kids being stolen from the airport. She tracks down a body of Logan in San Diego and fights La Monja, which is the nun. And then the last one is Bandita, my Dominican gunslinger from New York. She has a bullet bounce, meaning she can ricochet bullets off walls. She infiltrates a Broadway theater group and takes them down.
And now you've got these five different superheroines, Latino superheroes. But where did this idea come from that you were the first? I'm not saying you're not. Like I can't think of somebody before you that did this. Which one was your very first
character?
Jalisco was the very first one. That's my mother's birth date right there, Jalisco. Yeah. And where did the idea come from? You'd written in the screenplay. You're ready to put it out there. Did you get any pushback? Did anybody be like, oh, that's not going to work? Oh, I don't know.
No,
you really want to take this to a bigger publisher. Like, did it kind of dovetail with, you said it dovetailed with social media. Was something like Kickstarter something that helped you off the bat? Like, yeah. In 2019, I guess Kickstarter was already a thing. How did you tackle that? Because Kickstarter, you got to come in with a strategy. You got to really, how much were you raising on the Kickstarter for that first project?
So for Jalisco, the comic, I didn't raise any money because I wasn't even thinking about it at that time. But the second one for Santa, I definitely did. And Santa, I put it at three just to start because this was my first one for Kickstarter. She's talking about my second book. And I ended up getting 7,000. And so I got really lucky. And because she did really well, she presents. She has very cool colors as well.
She's Texan. Cool
palette. Yeah, she's my Texan girl. Was a fun. It was political. It's still political.
It's cool to be from Texas when you're like her, not when you're like Ted Cruz, but Texas represents. I'm Texan. Sorry about that.
Yeah. All right. So she did really well. And so for the next ones, I started them all at five. And so they all ended up with 7,000 or 8,000. So I beat my green light, and then I got a couple thousand more, which is really nice. So definitely Kickstarter helps in regards to printing costs. It doesn't cover all my printing costs. Obviously it does not cover any of my artist costs, but it doesn't hurt because it does get the word out, you know, and obviously I do pre-sell a lot of them because they're throwing money in and they're getting a book at the same time. So it doesn't hurt. There's different causes that I have on it. So you can donate a book to high school. You can donate a book to the Girl Scouts or whatever organization I'm donating to as well. So I enjoy it. I mean, I have Mashika right now. That's my new one that I'm doing a crowdfunding for. But that's my next series. That's my phase two, as I call it.
Yeah, we'll talk about it. La Brava, what I loved about it is that you put out these five different books. Did you put out a sixth book that kind of collected, where they all team up, where they kind of collected all of them? Is that that was the one you had at San Diego this past summer?
Yeah, it debuted at San Diego Comic Con. So that's called La Brava. That's the name of the team. And it's exactly that. They all come together because serial politicians are getting killed off one by one. And so that's why they get banded together to find out who it is before it goes up the ranks to the president.
And that was yet another screenplay. And I guess comics are so popular right now. And obviously, like, we have comic book movies every other weekend. Any interest in this stuff? Because either as a cartoon or as a film series or as a TV series, like, I think this stuff kind of lends itself really well to that kind of media.
Yeah, when Jalisco came out, the first one, I got brought into a couple networks right off the bat, where just with my one book, and then we hit pandemic, and then I ramped up, et cetera, and I kept, and there was no more meetings. I had three really great meetings already prior.
Did the pandemic kill them?
I'm sorry?
The pandemic kind of killed them?
No, it didn't kill them per se, but like Warner Brothers brought me in, and like the first thing they said, it's hard to do it because we already have superheroes, which is absolutely true because they owned all of DC, which is great. Disney, same thing. They have a Marvel library of thousands of people. They're not going to grab me, which is fine. But the point is, I still got the meeting, which is really nice as well.
Yeah. And they're so, like, don't worry. We have Batgirl. Her movie's coming out in a year or two. Yeah. Don't worry. It'll come out anytime.
And then absolutely. But, you know, it doesn't hurt. And honestly, everyone's really nice. And like, they're really supportive, regardless of everyone that I spoke to prior. And so now that I'm with him, every time I get a new, like, news source, I get something else, right? And so when I had LA Times at San Diego Comic Con Special Edition last year, I got three arts. It was three arts and anonymous. And so I chose three arts. And then this year at San Diego Comic Con, I got Spectrum News again. And so I had a really great
coverage. You're talking about getting coverage.
News coverage. Yeah. I get really lucky with my news coverage. And so I had a really cool production company come in because they saw my my news coverage. And so I'm talking with them right now. And then also I have another really cool, same thing. I have networks. I have different networks that I'm speaking to. Nothing is set in stone. So I can't say anything regardless, but it's still really cool either way.
No, it's awesome. And I think it's deserved. Like, you really are an ass kicker. And I think that's, I was like, I got to have her on. She's so that in like a couple of years, I can be like, hey, oh, Caden was on Geekscape. Oh, yeah. Caden was on Geekscape. Well, let's talk about this brand new Kickstarter. I'm going to go ahead and share the Kickstarter up here, Geekscapist. And this is, like you said, it's a brand new phase. Mm-hmm. And the Kickstarter is active, Geekscapist. Spoiler, though, Caden blew past that goal, too. When you were talking about putting up Kickstarters for your little Brava characters, mm-hmm. you were talking about, like, for after the third, fourth, and fifth one were all kind of like a $5,000 goal. You mm-hmm. went back to a $3,000 goal. Say that three times fast. For this new one, why not go for five? Not that you're not going to hit five, but were you kind of saying, hey, this is a brand new, like kind of a brand new flavor?
One, because I don't have as many followers on Latina princesses as I do Latina superheroes. Two, my demographic is different because their princesses are younger. So I don't have that demographic yet in regards to my followers or my supporters. And then three, we're in a recession. And so, like, you're paying $5 or $6 or $7 for gas, as you know, like you're a little bit tighter on money kind of deal. And so for those reasons, I chose 3,000, which is fine. I got it like in a day and a half, like no big deal. But like, it's, you know, it's cool regardless. I got it. It's an introductory to a new series.
Mm-hmm. And talk about this one. This is, you said you already did the superheroes. These are the princesses. To me, they always feel like goddesses. Like, this feels like the pantheon that looks over La Brava. Are they connected in any way? Like, if you read, like, are there references to these characters in La Brava books? Do they interconnect? I mean, I'm a Marvel nerd, so of course I want everything to interconnect. You know, I sit through those stupid credits. How does this work? Like, there's not any carryover from the work you've done before?
They are actually all going to meet eventually. But I have to figure out that timeline because they're in different times. So these are Native and Latina princesses. Thank you. They're not goddesses, though, but they are princesses. But they all live within the same quadrant within the galaxy. And we learn all this stuff later on the sixth book of when they become a team together. But yeah, you do see little eggs of different A La Brava characters within each of the comic books, of the princesses comic books. So that's to come. Here you absolutely don't, because she's Mexica Aztec princess, so she's much further back in Mesoamerican times. Mm-hmm. So the superheroes would not have existed yet as of that time. So you absolutely don't see anything in this book. But this one, it's a cute story. She goes on an adventure like all the princesses do in my series. She needs to become a crown princess, so she has to do her princess initiation, meaning she gets told three riddles. She has to go out and venture and find the three corresponding prizes that go with the riddles and then return, right, to Aslan, to her kingdom. But she doesn't know that the neighboring tribe called the Tlaxcala is attacking the Aztecs. And so she thinks they're part of the initiation. So it's very cute. It's a little bit more like Home Alone in that sense. So she defeats them, those of the Tlaxcala, our enemies that are attacking the Aslan or Aztecs as right now. And so she defeats them on every turn, very cute ways, very Home Alone type of ways, right? Because my princesses can't fight. And she ends up returning as a crown princess with the three riddles along the way.
And she teams up with like a leopard, and this looks like a fire lizard.
So that's an ocelot, actually. So
an ocelot, okay.
Ocelots are in Mexico. So that's elote, the ocelot. And then the on top, that's Nessa, that's the ajolado. And so that's native to Mexico as well.
That's super cool. And you said that this is for like a younger demographic. Mm-hmm. Are you finding that some of your supporters, because obviously in Kickstarter you have accumulated supporters for your past books, are you finding that some of the supporters for your past books are coming back, even though this one's for a younger demographic?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of them. This one's actually much more, I have way more female backers than the other ones. All my superhero ones, I have like pretty much an even amount or a little bit more on male side for my superheroes. This one is predominantly female.
What do you think that's attributed to? Just nerds like me like superheroes?
Well, that's one. And then two, like the princesses. And so I don't know if a boy would buy a princess book if not to gift it.
Hell yeah, we're going to buy a princess book.
All right, good.
Like, it's a, like, there's a princess book. Like, you, I have Ian Kerner on here every other week talking about Princess Leia, like in Wonder Woman. Like, we all, it's a princess book. But I get what you're saying. If you're discovering it for the first time, a guy is probably like, I'm going to opt for the superheroes. And then I'm going to get, so this is more like a prequel story in like a sense. This is a, or establishes the pantheon of the world, like establishes kind of like the stuff that's going to happen later. It's getting bigger and bigger. And you're following the same model. You put out 5 of these. And then you put out a 6th that combines them all.
Correct.
Have you thought about what's going to happen after that? Like, are we going to do the future? Or are we going to do, I don't know, something else? Or are you just going to, like, taking it one at a time?
I'm supposed to have a phase 3, and that's supposed to be Latina superheroes. So that's supposed to happen. Right now, I'm doing... one project for sure is already going right now because I have 6 books going, 6 comics going, because one's wrapping up right now, another one's wrapping up. And so, and then I have to do one more project that I really wanted to do prior. And so I'm not quite sure when I'm going to do the Latina superheroes, but eventually they all will meet. And I also have to do a V2, a volume 2 of all my superheroes, the Ala Brava superheroes as well. So I'm between that and the volume 2 of Ala Brava or Latina superheroes, which just means male and female and non-binary.
Okay, hold up. I just thought of something, and I'm wondering if this... Are you writing a lot of these concurrently with each other?
I write all the books.
I know, but I mean, while you're writing... You're not writing, like... You're writing, like, 2 at a time, right? Or, like... Or are you overlapping? Like, how much are you overlapping? That's really the question. It's like, how much are these books overlapping with each other? I know you're writing all of them. But do you wait for like one idea to get out the door before another idea comes in? Because I don't think you can. Is it? It doesn't make sense at all. They all kind of you have to sift them all, right? Like all the voices are screaming. Like as a creator, all the voices scream at the same time, and then you almost. I mean, that's how I am. I feel like I'm sifting sand when I create stuff.
Yeah,
like it's like you get all the voices, and you just have to sift them as much as possible. And the ones that kind of coalesce the earliest, they start kind of exiting first, and they start heading to the finish line, as the other ones kind of coalesce as you sift, and they start kind of going off. But yeah, several stories are being told at the same time.
That's
right?
That's interesting. No, I have stories on the back burner. That's the way I kind of call
it. And you leave them there.
When I want to, I can bring them forward whenever I feel like it. But yeah, because I just write down notes when I have notes. Because I do have like my Latina superheroes. I had like 3 of them already written down because they're fun and they're easy, right? Because those are going to be my anti-heroes. But for my V2, I hired actually 2 authors or 2 writers ready to write out 2 of my books. And I wanted to write out one particular one. So I haven't written that one out yet. But the way I do it, I just do the ones I want, honestly. That's kind of how it is. I'm just not there yet because I have certain other projects that I'm working on that has nothing to do with my work. And so that's where I'm at right now. But I'll figure it out. I'll know whether or not I have 2 or 3 features I'm writing, and then I will go back to my work, meaning my comics. But to answer your question prior, I always have to be ahead. So Catherine Hardwick has a saying that's fix it in pre. And that's very much me, right? Like you always have to fix it in pre. Because when you're in production, you can't go back on it, right? Like, there's no turning back ever. And so, like, I have Majestics, which is the 6th book, the team-up book, done when they're barely getting on the 2nd book, which is Allura. She's my 2nd princess, my witch princess. And so it's just like that. Like, I always have to be, for sure, for comics, you have to be 5 steps ahead because it takes so long in production. It takes the 6 months plus. Plus the actual sending it to printers, which takes a couple months anyway. So like Allura right now is wrapping up in regards to my lettering and my editing rather. And so I have 3 months out. So she'll be out for WonderCon, which is in March, right? Because I have to see it. And then the next one, I have to see if she's for Comic-Con, San Diego. And so like, it's just that.
You have these 3-4 month windows that you have to keep putting these books out because that's what the con schedule is. I mean, we're going to see you at LA Comic Con the first weekend of December. And then after that, it's kind of a race to WonderCon and then with San Diego. And then you just did New York and you're going to be back in New York, I'm guessing, again next year. Okay. So that's 4 books a year, kind of like evenly, roughly paced 3 months apart. I love that you mentioned... Yeah, Catherine Hardwick, her presentation that I saw was Fix It in Prep. And that's why I got to see all of her awesome floor plans and storyboards and sketches and stuff. A lot of sketches. I love sketches because I get self-conscious about my sketches. I'm not an artist. I do draw, but I don't. You have to draw very quickly when you're creating mm-hmm. stuff and collaborating with others. Like you don't want to muck up the process. You want to have a kind of a quick output, and mm-hmm. so you just want to get ideas down, which I think we both talked about. And so her sketches were like really cool and really rough and had a ton of personality. And afterwards, I went up and just like gave her a big hug. It was like, thank mm-hmm. you so much for showing that. That was so reaffirming, because yeah. when you don't show that, because I don't hang out with too many other directors, you see them, but when you hang out with directors, nobody's busting out their floor plans. Like, I think that's what I meant to say. I hang out with a lot of filmmakers. Nobody's like, hey man, let me show you my directing book. Let me show you my floor plans. Like, everybody kind of has their own method. Mm-hmm. And in not talking to other directors about my method, I look at my directing notebooks, which to me are like my diaries. I love them very much. And I did some drawing. When did I show drawings? I showed drawings to some Geekscapists right before my wedding, because they were coming into town. And Shane, one of the Geekscapists, said, you need to draw more. And I said, I do draw. People just don't see them. And I get self-conscious about this stuff, because if you look at these notebooks, you're going to think that I'm like the killer from Seven. Like, some of this stuff is so rough and sketch, but it's done in a hurry to get the ideas down.
Yeah.
That when Catherine showed me her like sketches that would make you think that she's the killer from Seven, I was just so happy. I was like, you're right. And you're right. Fix it and prep. Like, you save so much yeah. money. And so I gave her a big hug and said, I love you. And she said, I love you too. And I said, thank you for showing that. It made me feel very good. And I took I can send you the photos I took of like her okay. creative stuff. I definitely took a lot of photos of that stuff. Okay. So here's what the mission, Geekscapists, because Caden's busy and we're not going to keep her and drone on about directing and Jonathan's insecurities as a filmmaker. This is what you got to do. All right, Geekscapists, I want you all listening. First off, you need a vote so we don't all descend into a hellscape any further than we already have. Okay, so first off, if you're listening to this live and you got a week left to vote, please vote in the midterms, Americans. Don't let things like Brazil dissuade you, where things didn't go Bolsonaro's way and suddenly there's people locking down cities and running in the streets. We just got to push forward, Geekscapists, so you got to vote. Second thing I want you to do is I want you to go to Kickstarter and I want you to look for the Masika Aztec Princess Kickstarter. It is past its goal of 3,000. It's currently at 3,577, but don't let that dissuade you. You're going to get a comic book. Like, you're paying for a comic and you're paying for Caden to keep her workflow going and keep this story rolling and getting it in bigger, better places. So if you're looking at this thing, there's some cool incentives. You donate enough, you're going to get an advanced signed copy of the book. Maybe you get two so you can gift one. What is the gift and receive club?
You get to donate it, actually. I believe that one. Okay. But that also, so that's our youth organization this time instead of the Girl Scouts. Mm-hmm. They're super cool. They're over here. They're LA based over here. They are really cool. This is for the younger members, of course, of the Poderosa mm-hmm. organization, but they go to the games. They go to the Angel City games all together, you know, with their flags and everything like that. And so I thought they're a really cool group to give the books to.
Yeah. It sounds like this would be right up their alley too. They would definitely dig this stuff. You can actually get drawn into the Majestics comic.
So that's the last one for sure. So Majestics is the team up one. So that's when they all meet at the Princess Academia. And so that's where the girls come together. There's a whole big story to that I'm not going to tell you, but you can get drawn into it as one of the princesses or staff if you're a male.
Well, Geekscape is no spoilers here, but definitely go to Kickstarter, check out this this campaign and donate to it if you want to jump on board so that you too can be like, oh yeah, I knew Caden way back when she was on Geekscape and I've been a supporter since the princess stuff. And dudes, donate to the princess thing. Come on now, like, don't be silly. I know you like superheroes as much as I do. We'll obviously be up here next week talking some Black Panther when the movie comes out, but listen, the princess books, go get that one where you get one, you're gonna read it. And then the second one, you're going to gift. So do that Kickstarter one. All right. Go look for it. Kate, I guess we're going to see you at LA Comic Con. We've been submitting some panels and getting some panels approved. So Geekscapists will be at LA Comic Con. I can only guess you're going to have a booth there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm with the Creators Court.
What is that?
Creators Court is Comic Bug and Collector's Paradise put together. So we have a whole row just for us.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Like, you've almost like bullied it. Like, you turned around, you turned down the wrong aisle, man. Now you're going to get nothing but indie books, and you better be ready for it.
That's Which awesome. Is a great thing. Yeah.
Yeah. New York Comic Con, correct me if I'm wrong, but last time I was in New York Comic Con a few years ago, I thought the best thing about New York Comic Con was the Artist Alley. It used to be at a separate kind of building. I don't know if it is anymore.
No, we're downstairs now.
That's what you have to go, and it's just Artist Alley. Like, when you're down, if it, that's the best way. Like, I found that downstairs area the true con. Like, to me, that was the real con. Down there, it was just artists. Our own Fernando Pinto was there from Chile. He did the Geekscape logo. He's our guy. When I went to New York Comic Con last time, and it was that separate little artist alley that's all in that downstairs area, I was like, this is the real con. Everything up there is the big stuff and the flashy stuff. This is where the real stuff gets created. And I just hung out there. I thought it was awesome. That's like the heartbeat of that con.
It is. We had really cool people. We had Frank Miller was there in front. One row in front of me was Kevin Eastman. We had Snyder was one row behind me. We had really cool, really cool people there. And so it was just packed the whole time today.
Well, we've had Kevin on the show. I'd love to have Kevin back on the show. But go ahead and put a word in for me with Scott Snyder and Frank Miller. Hit him up. Send him like a – what do you do? Send him a DM, something like that. Just hit him up. Send him an email, all right? Be like, hey, come on Geekscape. Watch this idiot ramble for a bit. I think that's it, Geekscape. You got your missions. You're going to vote, and you're going to donate to this Kickstarter campaign. And follow Caden on social media. Let me find out where that is, Caden. Social media,
Latina
where they follow
superheroes.
You.
So Instagram is @LatinaSuperheroes, plural. And then the other one is Latina Princesses, also plural.
Okay. So if you got a problem with the princesses, you can follow Latina Superheroes. I'm not going to jump on that anymore. Caden, thanks for being on Geekscape. Love it. Love sharing you with the audience at Geekscape.
Thank you.
Tell your friends to subscribe. We got a brand new episode coming up next week. We're definitely going to be talking with Wakanda Forever after we've seen that film. And I get solicited a lot of guests now. And I pick and choose. All right. I want to support the right people. And sometimes it's like writing your scripts, Caden. Like, I pick guests based on like interest. Like, I want to have to talk to these people. But we're pretty chock full for the rest of the year, and we have a ton of LA Comic Con panels that you'll also get on the feed. So you're going to want to subscribe. You're going to want to share this with your friends. And what also helps our visibility is leave those little 5-star reviews. So all that stuff helps. Keep sharing. We got like 30 shows in the network. So just search Geekscape. Something's going to scratch the itch for your pop culture needs. And find us on social media and communicate with us and all that. Till next time, this is Geekscape. I want you all to don't hate, create. And Caden, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you.
Bye, Geekscapists.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.